Thank you for coming tonight. I'm excited about this. I've got a little booklet on gates. We're going to look at this. We're talking about Genesis 19, verse 1 through 3. I've got a set of notes, and I want to really get to the end of this because I'm going to read to you a little bit from the book by Steve Collins on discovering Sodom, when they find the gate of Sodom. I hope we can make it. I'm going to read chapter 19, verses 1 through 3. This is just what we're looking at tonight. Mainly, we're looking at the word gate, and I just want to lay some foundation for this. This is the same day, this afternoon of our story, the two angels and the Lord ate lunch with Abram. And then Abram escorts them on their way, and the same day, by that evening, they have arrived at Sodom. And so it begins chapter 19, verse 1. The two angels arrived at Sodom. In the evening, and that's the same day they'd had lunch with Abram, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. Now that's what this whole class tonight is about, that line right there. Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. Now the reason this is important for me, and I'm trying to communicate to you to kind of get a perspective on this, because when you think of a gate, you walk up to some people's houses, and you open the gate and you walk into the yard. Or you've got a wall with a gate that you swing open, and then at night they shut the gate and they put a bar in front of it, and Lot's sitting like in this doorway or in this gate. If you look in this first picture right there, there's a picture of Megiddo. That's a model of the map or the gate at Megiddo, and we'll look more at that, but that's the gate system right here. The bottom picture, I took all these pictures. This picture at the bottom is a postern gate, which is a passenger gate, a passageway gate for an individual to walk in. So the main gate could be closed, but there'd be a little door on the side that you could get in just for a postern gate. That's what's at the bottom. That's at the Damascus gate. That's from 135 AD. That's down below today's Damascus gate on the north wall of Jerusalem. There's a postern gate there. Then right beside it was the big monumental gate to get into the north side of Jerusalem. But that's the difference right there. Lot is sitting in the main gate, the main gateway of the city. And it says, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, the two angels, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. We're going to go over these verses. My lords, he said, please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night and then go on your way early in the morning. No, they answered, we will spend the night in the square. And the square would be after you go through that monumental gate, there'd be a city square there. They'll say, we'll just stay out here in the city square, out here where there's trade and there's, you know, street vendors setting up their stuff. But he insisted, Lot, so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. Now again, Lot is living in a house, which means he's gone from being a shepherd or a pastor, you know, with servants. Remember how him and Abram had a part because they had so many flocks and servants? Well, he's no longer living like in a tent like Abram is. He's now living in a house in the city. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate, and then the story continues. That's what we're looking at tonight. Now, on this booklet right here, I want to go to this booklet and spend some time just to give you an idea. This is going to get off subject a little bit, but I'm going to try to rush through this without being ridiculous. Tony has taken a tour. She's been with me at all these sites, but I've also took her through a tour of this book, and she just kind of, you know, she was very nice, but, you know, I could tell she glazed over and just like listening to me talk. So I'll try to, you know, be patient. This is online, so the pictures are better online. But nonetheless, that's that first page, Ancient Gates. Now turn to the very first page, and there you can see a map, the map of Israel. And there is a verse. If we have a hinge verse on this, it's very interesting. In 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 15, it talks about Solomon's reign, and it says, and this is the account of the forced labor that King Solomon drafted to build the house of the Lord, that'd be the temple, his own house, that would be his palace in Jerusalem, and the Milo, that's that area, that's the stepstone structure that we talk about. That's the Milo, the stepstone structure below the Palace of David by over the Gihon Springs. But here's what's important for us tonight. And the wall of Jerusalem and Hazor and Megiddo and Gezer. They were all built 1, 2, 3, 4 at the same time. And it says wall, but you don't just build a wall, you put in a gate. And you can see tonight as we rush through this, the gate at Gezer, Megiddo, and Hazor, and Jerusalem are all 6-chamber gates with 2 towers. And here's a visual of it. If you're looking at the top from here, as you enter the city, there'd be a tower here. Now here's the wall going this way, and there's a tower here, and the wall's going this way. And this would be very high. They'd have military stationed on top so they could look down. It's a defensive tower. Now, in the regular city wall, you could just have the wall going around the city and have towers every so often just around the city. So, I mean, if you even go to Jerusalem, you can see towers still built in from the 1500s when Suleiman the Magnificent built the current city wall around Jerusalem. So this would be a tower just in the wall. But the city gate would be open like this with 2 towers, and then as you pass into the city, there is going to be, especially at Megiddo, Hazor, Jerusalem, and Gezer, there's going to be 6 gates or chambers. We'll just do it like this. 1, 2, 2. Okay, I got to get another one down here. 3 chambers right here, and those would be tall buildings also. And you could be able, they'd be a door. You could go in here, and that's where they would have meetings. There'd be again 3 chambers here. 1, 2, 3 chambers, and I will call this Tower A, Chamber 1, Chamber 2, Chamber 3, Tower B, Chamber 4, Chamber 5, Chamber 6. And this would be very tall. These would be taller than these chambers, but you could go in here and there'd be meetings, there'd be businesses taking place in there. It's a judicial system. There'd be court cases being said there. Whenever you see someone of prominence, if it's Boaz, if it's Job, if it's Lot, they're going to be sitting in the city gate. They'll meet here. There would be benches here. This is the wall, but then around the inside here, there'd be benches for people to sit. They'd have discussions, whatever's taking place there. There'd be benches inside those city gates. And you can see, well, okay, we'll look at several of them. On this map, now you can see I've got in this booklet, I've got gates from Dan. I got a gate from 2000 BC that Abraham would have passed by. I got a gate from 900 BC. Hazor, we've mentioned that. Megiddo, again, that's going to be a major fortress at Megiddo because that's in the Jezreel Valley where the trade routes ran. That's where battles took place. And so that Megiddo wall gate has to be very important. Gezer, we're going to look at that first. Then Ashkelon, an ancient gate from the days of the Philistines or Canaanites. We'll see the same thing in Jerusalem. And finally, we're going to talk about the one in Sodom at Tel El Hamam. Here's the Hebrew verse written underneath there. I've got in the square of the cities. Now, this first gate we look at, this is in Gezer. If you want to, I would like you to kind of, so you may know where these cities are, but kind of keep an eye on this map right here. So when I flip to a city, you're not just like, you know, another map. But Gezer is over here. It's in the hill country, or going to the Shephela after the hill country. Got some rolling hills before you get to the coastal plain. But you see where Gezer's at. And Gezer was actually given to Solomon right there in chapter 9 of 1 Kings. It says Gezer was given to Solomon as a dowry gift when Solomon married Pharaoh's daughter. He sent some troops up, a military up. They destroyed the Canaanites, burnt the city of Gezer, and then said, Solomon, there's a present. You can have the city. And then Solomon goes in and restores the city and builds this gate. You're looking at that gate on page 3. He builds that gate. Now looking at it, you're looking at it from the inside out. You're looking at that gate from this side. You're standing here looking this way at that gate. And you can see that channel in the middle, that's the gutter. And that's going to be covered up with flat stones. And right there in the middle is the road that goes out. You can see the 6 chambers a little bit on the side. They're 3 on one side, 3 on the other. And then right there you can see the towers. It's in the back of the picture where the towers are a little bit taller. That's where the guard towers would have been. Now I've got a drawing of it. I just drew some lines on top of that. Tower A, Tower B, and then I've got the chambers numbered there. Turn the page. And there's another picture of that gate to the left side. And then next to it is some administrative buildings and some other details that has been excavated. But you can kind of see the gate, and then buildings would have continued. Bottom of page 4, there I am. I've entered into the gate. I'm stepping off of the street into what we've called Chamber 6. I'm stepping right here. Well, if I number these different, this is numbered. This would be 6, 5, 4 here. And I'm stepping right here up into Chamber 6 off the road. I'm stepping up there. Next page, you can see me barely there, but I am sitting in Chamber 5 in my diagram there on one of the benches. Right where the benches are, I'm sitting on the stone. It would have been covered up with a board and decorated and things, but I'm sitting in the chamber. See that little box behind my shoulder, would be my right shoulder. That's probably some kind of water trough that they would have had water in that water gate. You'll see the same thing in Jerusalem. They've got one of those chambers is for water. That's a close-up of me, and I've got the chambers number. Now I've changed numbers 1, 2, 3 right there, and I'm sitting there in chamber number 3, and you see the tower behind me. Okay, I'm turning the page quickly. There's another picture of the same thing, just at a distance. I've got it labeled. You see the entrance, the street. You can see the gutter, and that would have had flat stones on it, and the water would have ran out of the city out like that. Bottom of page 6, I'm standing up towards the front, by in front of this. I'm standing right about here in that particular gate, holding up a piece of pottery I'd picked up off the ground there. That was just, you can see the pottery that I'm holding up. Okay, now, the next page, page 7, is some drawings of this. This is now the actual, well, that first picture, it still says Rittmeyer on it. That's right off. Lean Rittmeyer is a great archaeologist, and he's a draftsman. So he has done a lot of drafting. A lot of the pictures, he's worked very closely with, he started working with Benjamin Mazur back in the 60s, and he worked with his granddaughter, Eliot, who excavated. We talked about her before, and he's done a lot of drawings for her. One time, probably about 15 years ago, I was putting stuff up on, he's got my website and stuff, and I had got a picture, I labeled a picture wrong. I mislabeled a church on the Madaba map that I'd taken a picture of the Madaba map, and I mislabeled a church. I called it the Shiloh Church, or where the Pool of Shalom's at, and it was actually the Nia Church. And I got an email from Lean Rittmeyer saying, that church is not the Pool of Shalom. That's the Nia Church. The Pool of Shalom Church is, and then he identified a different roof. So I made the correction, but Lean Rittmeyer actually emailed me and made a correct, and it wasn't, it was just, they're into this stuff, and so it's like, even Collins, who's wrote this book about excavating Sodom, he likes to make sure people understand what he's doing, so they make corrections on their maps instead of just saying some random place, because people are talking about Sodom and Gomorrah, they say things and they're not true, and they just perpetuate these misconceptions. And he's trying to get, Bible scholars and, commentaries to identify where this is at correctly. Nonetheless, I took that from Lean Rittmeyer. That's at Het Gezer. And you see the two towers, A and B. And then you can see the 1, 2, 3 chambers, 4, 5, 6 chambers. And I've got a G in chamber 2. That's where I would have been sitting in that picture. And then the bottom picture, that's a picture right there from the site, a picture of the gate, and the same thing you can see, the 6 chambers, and there you can see the gutters covered up with flat stones, the bottom of page 7, and the two towers, you see the guards on the towers, and then I got a G on there to kind of for a reference. Okay, next page. Now we're going to Hazor. This is up north of Galilee. This is also one of the gates built by Solomon, because he's going off and he's fortifying his nation. He's fortifying the west with Gezer. He's fortifying the north with Hazor. He's fortifying the trade routes in the Jezreel Valley with Megiddo. And of course, he's fortifying Jerusalem. And there is, right there on that first picture on page 8, you see Tony. This is 2007. And Tony's leaning against the wall of the first tower. and she's standing in the opening of the first chamber, and then to her side there, that's the opening. There's going to be a tower on the other side and six chambers. The bottom picture on page 8, you can see the tower that she was standing by, and 1, 2, 3 chambers very clearly identified there. And you can see on the other side, chamber 5 and 6 of the on the picture there. Turn the page again. Now on page 9, I've got a picture right from the front of the Hazor gate. And you can see the two towers, tower 1 and 2. And then I've got little lines drawn with numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the chambers right there. And you're entering the city of Hazor, a military city. And the palace that's being excavated, and right back there is also labeled. Now I got to listen to the guy that excavated that, Amon Ben Tur. He's passed away now, but he's from the Hebrew University. He spoke to us while we were there. He's very, once again, very excited about his project. I mean, these guys are out there excavating. They've got people working with them. But if you ask them a question, it's like their life is the city of Hazor or this excavation. And you think I overload you with information. These guys, it's like, and then they go into archaeology language, you know, layer 7 and the, you know, anyway, and you just like nod your head and take notes and you go back and yeah, I'll just buy your book and read your book and go slower. And I did. There's a drawing of that same gate, Hazor, and once again, you notice the two towers and then, of course, the building over the top of the six chambers. Now we're going to Megiddo, page 10. Is this making sense at all? I just want you to see it. Obviously, all these places spent 5, 10, 20, 30 years excavating, or you know, one or two excavations. They may have done it in the 1960s. They do it again in 2010. So there's years and years. And this wasn't excavated with bulldozers. And all this stuff was buried. It was buried. It's just what's called a tell. In Hebrew, it's a T-E-L, tell. In Arabic, it's tall, T-A-L-L. That's why we call it Tall El Haman. It's on this side of the Jordan in the land of Jordan, so it's Tall El Haman. If it's on this side, it's Tell El Haman. Or this would be called Tell Megiddo. Or in your Bibles, Har Megiddo, which is hill, Har for hill, the hill of Megiddo. It's the remains of Megiddo, the tell. And this is a tell. So it was buried and they excavated it, not with a bulldozer, but with little trowels, a little bit at a time. Unbelievable. And they sift through it. But nonetheless, that's we off way into that. But this is a very elaborate tower. This is what's on the front, your front cover, that top picture. So if you look at that top picture, and we've got another picture coming here, you can maybe see the two towers right here. And then again, that building in the back that's going to have the six chambers in it. And then there's all kinds of, you know, a gate system of getting into the gate. And then once you enter the gate, you'd enter into the city square and other things. But what we have right here on page 10 is tower A and B, and you're going to kind of turn and go through there. I notice the trees. Notice the palm trees in the background. These are much more fun to look at in color and then on a big computer screen because you can zoom in and see a lot of detail. Now, in the picture on the bottom of page 10, I'm inside the Megiddo Gate looking out, and it looks like you're looking at farmland in Iowa. I mean, it looks just like farmland in Iowa. They've got crops out there. See, some farmer farms up to the Tell Megiddo and farms around the whole thing, and someone comes out one day and says, we want to excavate, and they got permission from the country to begin digging Tell El Haman, and they want to do it in a controlled scientific way, and everything has to be documented so researchers can go back 100 years from now and read through all your reports and what you did every day if they want to make a correction. You may have come to the wrong conclusion. Okay, I'm standing in the gate. They're looking out of the city of Megiddo, and you see on one side's chamber 2, on the other side's chamber 5. Turn the page, page 11. There I'm standing on top of it. I'm standing on top of Tower B, looking down across that Tower A into Chamber 1, and you can see the pathway going into Megiddo. There's Tony walking through the chambers in front of Chamber 5, probably between Chamber 5 and 2, going to Chamber 6. That's on bottom of page 11. And then you turn to page 12. There's your drawings. There's a drawing of the gate system on page 12 with Tower A and B, and then the six chambers. Notice the city wall continues. That's labeled there. I will point this out also. It's coming up at Ashkelon, and we talk about ramparts or glacis. And right there on the right side of that top picture on page 12, where I've got, you can see where I wrote city wall, but then coming off the city wall is going to be this slope. So you're going to have the city wall built up here like this, but then coming off of it, going down the ground, is going to be this slope. That's called a rampart, or a G-L-A-C-I-S, glacis. And that is, if you're going to attack the city, we're not going to let you run up with a ladder and put the ladder up there. You're going to have to run up this slope, and the slope is at such an angle that you can't move. You're going to fall down it. So it's designed to withstand an invading army. And so you'll see a better example of that glacis, or the rampart, when we get to Ashkelon. And then at the bottom of page 12, there's that same model. I saw when you go to Megiddo, they've got a center, like a visitor center, you know, big as this room or bigger. But in the middle of it is about as big as these tables right here. You've got a model of the city. And they can push buttons, whoever the presenters can push a button and raise up the city gate and then lower it back down and raise different things so the group can see it. And you can see some little black knobs on there. Those are little lights. So they're, instead of, you know, not knowing what you're talking, you just push a button and turn that light on. And you're talking about, well, that's the stable area where we found where they kept the chariots and the horses. Or this is the gate area. But once again, you can see the gate and the gate system leading up to it. That's Megiddo. Next page, page 13, that's all the same pictures but kind of combined. I've got a diagram in the middle of page 13, kind of looks like this diagram. If you can see, you got the tower A and B. That would be the outside of the city. You're going to walk, the towers are on the outside, then you walk through the gates into the city, and those are the same pictures. Turn the page. Here we are. We're at Ashkelon. Now, Ashkelon is Philistine city. What is it? It's 5 miles from Gaza. I mean, when we were there in 2007, Hamas and Fatah were having a war in the Gaza Strip. Now, these are two terrorist organizations. These are two Palestinian groups. And George Bush had just convinced the Israelites, the Jews, you may remember this, the land for peace concept. If the Palestinians will calm down, if you just give them some land and their own place. And Israel had the Gaza Strip all built up. They had greenhouses, and they are producing food. It's great land right by the sea, beautiful place. Trump wants to turn into a resort. Beautiful place. But they were convinced the Palestinians will stop harassing you if you give them some land. So say, all right. Signed the treaty. They gave the Gaza Strip back to the Palestinians. The Palestinians, okay, now I don't want to get political, but this is what was on the news. They went in, and to prove we don't need this kind of Jewish propaganda, they bulldozed the greenhouses, dug up the crops. It's like, not going to do it that way. And by the time I got there in 2007, two terrorist groups tried to take over. Fatah and Hamas were fighting each other there, and they'd raided, there's dead bodies in the streets, is on the news. We're driving right by. Right there says Gaza, and we're driving right there. The border of Gaza is right there, and we're driving by. And on the news, there's, talk about January 6th, storming the Capitol. They were storming government buildings and crushing things. We went to Bethlehem, the same thing that was happening. But there, Fatah had arrested all the Hamas people and put them in prison. So we walked in there. It was like, what Christmas feels like when you're downtown in a city on Christmas? Everything's just like quiet. It's like, well, this is a weird day. We went to Bethlehem that same trip, 2007, on a different day during this conflict between the two terrorist groups. And we went to Bethlehem. It's like a ghost town. It's just nobody's, what had happened? Well, Hamas had put Fatah had put Hamas in prison because they're that also Palestinian territory. Anyway, nonetheless, that's way more than we want to talk about. Ashkelon is just north, just like a few miles from the Gaza Strip, right on the, and this is an ancient city from the days of Abraham, or an ancient gate, and you can see the two pictures right there. It's not a Solomon gate, it's much older. And you can see the remains of some bricks there. That part that's been built up, that arch that was built up, they had to replace that. That was gone. The arch was missing. Now I'm going to show you in just a moment the oldest arch that they found, because the arch is going to be one of the first things that falls out. And this is not stone. This is clay bricks. You can see like this picture right here. This is from the walls of Jericho. And this is you can actually still see it. That's the clay blocks of Jericho. Some of that wall would have fallen out. And this is actually some of the houses that were built up against the wall of Jericho. So the wall fell. But, for example, the house that Rahab lived in, this might be one of the bricks from her house. But it's in the same area. Okay, that's Ashkelon. Now you got a picture on page 15 of what it would have looked like. And you've got Tony standing right there by the arch on the right side. And you see the new modern rebuilt, and the original clay bricks below. We continue, this is more than you want to see. Page 16, that's the left side entrance of the gate. You can see in bottom page 16, you're walking through the gate that remains, and they've got it covered up so rain doesn't wash it away, because this has been buried for centuries. They pull the dirt off of it. It's like, oh my gosh, we found the original clay blocks of the city gate. Well, it's the first time it's been exposed, you know, for centuries. And so they got to build something over it, otherwise it's just going to, you know, be gone. The next page, page 17, you're looking straight at the gate of Ashkelon. And you got on the bottom picture, the picture of the blocks on the right side. Page 18, you've got a picture of the wall extending down to the right side. And the bottom of page 18, this gets a little interesting, a little off subject. But on the bottom picture, you can see I've got it says gate. That's where the gate is going. You've got the right side of the gate, the remains. But then far on the right side of the picture, you see those apparently steps. That's the beginning of the rampart of 2000 BC, Ashkelon. David would have faced this city. Of course, that was 1,000 years later. But that's the stone glacis that they built up. So when another one wanted to invade, they'd have to climb up to climb over the walls or to have a siege against the walls. So that whoever's going to attack the walls, they're doing all their work on a slope trying to knock through the walls while you're being shot at from the top. Sling stones are being hurled down and stones and boiling oil is being poured down on you. Now, the page 19, now that's a better picture of the glacis. Because you can see the arrow I'm pointing at gate there on the left side of the picture. At the very top, that's the walls of the city. At the very top, that's the walls of the city. But then you've got that glassy, the rampart. See how big that is coming all the way down. So anyone that wanted to attack the Canaanites in Abraham's day or Joshua's day later would have had to somehow get through that gate or get up that glassy, get through the walls. I mean, it's well fortified. Now, interestingly, if you're still with me, you see that little picture in the bottom of that top picture in a little white box. It's about this big. It's a golden calf, about this big, and it was found in that jar, like a little house. It's got a little door in it. And it was found right there. Notice how there's a little flat spot on the glacis. All these cities, when you'd come into the city, there'd be a place to stop and worship the god. To offer an offering. We talk about that on Sunday. Probably Sunday. Josiah, you could not worship at these high places. He covered them up or tore them down. This would be a Canaanite high place, and the golden calf, that is in the Israeli Museum. They found it while they're excavating. They found this container, and inside it was a golden calf, and it was in that flat area right there. There would have been some kind of a shrine for that golden calf. And this is your Bible's coming alive now. When the Israelites came out of Egypt, first thing they want to do is build a golden calf. So we got a golden calf like everybody else. Well, they have a golden calf of the Canaanites, and it was found right there. The bottom picture, page 19. Now you can see I'm looking at more of an angle looking down, and you see the Mediterranean Sea right there. This city is on the Mediterranean Sea. And you can see the walls. You can see the glacis. You can see the where that golden calf was found, and it got an arrow pointing back to the gate. That's Ashkelon. That's a Canaanite city, became a Philistine city. Then the next page, there's Tony standing just on the edge of Ashkelon, pointing down into the Mediterranean Sea. And there's two more pictures of that Canaanite city of Ashkelon. Again, it's kind of cool when you can see when they find stuff like that golden calf, and just kind of brings, those are the kind of things that are legendary. Okay, next page 21, there's two more pictures. They're a lot more fun to look at if they're in color on a computer screen, especially with the Mediterranean Sea in the background. You kind of get a, for when you look at this, you get to see that city, how beautiful a city it would have been to be in, how well built it is. It still remains 4,000 years later. It's still standing, parts of it, looking out over the Mediterranean Sea. I mean, what a great place to live. And that's the area just south of that. That's what Trump wants to take and turn into some kind of a resort area, unless the Egyptians beat him to it. Next page, 22, there's a close-up of that golden calf where it was found, Tony standing on the Mediterranean Sea. Okay, now we go to Dan. Dan is further north than Hazor. Dan was the city, and you can see it on the map there, when Jeroboam, the architect, the builder, the foreman for Solomon, who built the temple and the walls, he was overseeing these projects, Jeroboam. But when Solomon dies, Rehoboam, Solomon's son, becomes king, and Jeroboam decides he's got enough power, we're not going to pay this crazy taxes. They're paying ridiculous taxes, and they really were, because of Solomon. Solomon had worked the city. If we get into study, it's Solomon had put the nation in debt. He had crazy money, but he got so extensive in these building projects that they went into debt, and they had a charge the people more taxes to pay the national debt. And that's why Jeroboam was like, we're done. And they broke away, and they had a little bit of a war, and then they take the 10 tribes. And to keep the people from the northern 10 tribes of Israel to going down and worshiping in the temple like they're supposed to in Jerusalem, he says, no, these are the gods that brought you out of Egypt. And he set up a golden calf shrine in Bethel, just north of Jerusalem. And on the furthest end of his kingdom, at the furthest north you can go, he set up a golden calf shrine in Dan. And this is Dan. Now, I don't have any pictures. You can see the structure, the platform, the stonework of this shrine in Dan. You can go up there and see it. You can walk. You can stand right on where the altar was. You can walk right where the golden calf was standing. It's all right there. And it's well preserved. This is the gate of Dan. Now, this gate would be before Solomon, before David. This would be a gate that Abram, when Abram comes into the land, and you remember how he came down from the north, from Syria, came through Dan, Hazor, he would have went by this gate. There's a chance that Abram would, this gate functioning in its day. It's not as glorious as the other ones, but you can see there's a drawing of it. There's some pictures by it, but this is the oldest gate made out of clay bricks that has an arch. The arch, when they began excavating it, they got in and they found the arch. And you can see, there's just the overview of it on page 23. Turn the page and you now have a picture of the whole gate. And then you've got on the bottom of page 24 a close-up. I've kind of identified at the bottom of that picture on 24, you can see the two towers. It's still got two towers. Again, this is 4,000 years old, made out of clay bricks. And so you can see the two towers. You can see the beginning of the arch on both sides of that doorway. That doorway is not, that's a doorway, but that's not the, that's just a tunnel to go in through the gate. There's fill that goes around that, and that's not part of the gate. That's just fill that they didn't take all that fill, because you take all that fill out, your arch collapses. So you can see the arch that's original going up. And again, you can see it better on a computer. But that fill is just dirt that's built up over the years. And they tunneled through that dirt to make that little entryway. So the actual arch is still there. And that is the gate of Dan. It's probably the oldest gate that they found, especially in Israel. There's a couple more pictures on page 25. Notice the stones. The stone pavement on the top of page 25, that's the road that would have led up to it. That would be the city street coming into the city. You're going to see that's very similar. Those would have been put down purposely. Those are pavement stones that they would have put down. Page 26, you can see the pavement stones again. Okay, there's the date of the gate. 1750 was when the last excavate, when it was last used. But it was standing there in 2000. There's the top of the tower on page 27. Okay, now there's another gate at Dan, more along the time of, say, 900 BC, after Solomon. And this is this is again, this one gets confusing. It takes me some time to figure this out. I was there, took pictures, looked at maps, and I've got it figured out, but it's going to be too much to explain. But basically, you can see the outline of it right there. You're going to have an outer plaza. You can see right there, you're going to come into the outer plaza. You're going to go through past a platform with a where the king's throne would have sat when he was having court, and then you're going to go by another gate, go through the inner gate, and eventually go through the chambers. And that's kind of detailed on there. Here's a picture from Dan. No, that's not Dan. That's not Dan. Okay. Turn the page. Let's look in page 29. Yeah, okay. Very quickly. Here's the outer court as you're coming in. You're inside the gate system, top of page 29, but you're going into the gate. You're going to be going in through some, and you see something labeled there. There's a podium inside the gate there, and then you've got the inner gate, which is going to have the towers and the actual chambers. But out here in this outer court, this is important if you want to know this. As they're excavating this outer court, they found what is called the Tel Dan inscription. And Tel, what does Tel mean? It means a mound. It means the remains of over in Israel. If it's over in Jordan, it'd be called Tal. And Dan is the name of the city. So it's the Mound of Dan inscription. So as they're excavating that, they found there something posted by the Arameans. So remember, the Arameans are going to cause trouble with this because it's right there on their border. They're going to come across and defeat Israel several times, and Ahab's going to spend time fighting the Arameans. It's back and forth. But at one point, the king Ben-Hadad, the king of the Arameans, just like the Bible records, he set up an inscribed stone and put it there like you walk into a city, or you walk into, you got road signs, speed limits, where things are at, what are your tax dollars going for? Well, right there, the Tel Dan inscription is a welcome to the city, basically, but tells you this is now controlled by the Arameans. And what's important, it says, although it's a little confused, it says the house of David has been defeated, to the effect the house of David is no more. So you've got from around 850, somewhere around that time, I haven't prepared to look at it in detail. You can read a little bit there. It's too small. What's it say? 841 BC. It was defeated by the Arameans, and they says, we have overthrown the house of David. So in 841 BC, the Syrians, they knew that this was part of the old kingdom of David from 200 years before, that they have now finally overthrown. Now, you know from any kind of criticism of the Bible that David was just a mythical figure, that David was just, maybe if anything, he was a small head of a small tribe of people or something, and the legends grew like, Robin Hood or whoever. And it's like, and then you got to come against that. Well, all of a sudden, you've got from a historical king setting up a monument at Tel Dan, which is right on the border of his country, because the Bible says he defeated the northern part of Israel, and he says, I have taken over King David's territory. What, you mean that mythical tribesman that no one's, it's like, no, he in 841, they still remembered King David in that time period. And that's one of the huge archaeological finds testifying to the existence of David, because that's not a biblical inscription. That's an inscription by the Syrians saying we've defeated David's kingdom. And again, the Bible records that. Next page, page 30. The main thing is there about page 30 at the bottom. There I got a picture. I went up on top, and there's a group of people walking, exiting the city of David between the two chambers going out, and there's a better drawing of Tel Dan. There is a cool place on page 31. As you're going through that gate system, there's a platform right there. I've got two things to show you. There's a platform. There's a place for the two little circle things. I've got it labeled right there, C and B, and there's another one. That's where you would have had a post to hold up the canopy over the throne where the king would sit in the city gate to make judicial decisions. So the city gate was where all the business transactions took place. Boaz went there to do business. Job used to sit in the city gate. That's where the king would have sat on his throne with a canopy, and the stones are still there, the decorative stones holding up the canopy, and that's where he would have sat. But also, if you turn to page 32, within that city gate, at the bottom of page 32, is a little stone basin where you can pour offerings, put flowers or whatever, and that's where the gods would be worshipped there. It's a center of worship, which is called a high place. In the Bible, they destroyed the high place, or Israel turned to the high places. This is the high place of Dan where they would worship. Now, if it's the Syrians and the Arameans doing it, that's their problem. But if it's Israel doing it, it's what the prophets were railing against. That's where they were. That's the gods they were honoring instead of Yahweh, their God. They were following the pagans. And that's, again, you can see that at a couple places. And that's what this is. This is at Gesher. This is what I grabbed. I thought, oh, that's this one. But I looked at it. It's not. That's Gesher. That's the New Testament. That's, again, in front of the city gate. There's stones. And that's the god. Well, that's the god Hadad. Like Ben-Hadad means, Ben means son. Hadad's name of the god. This is the god Hadad of the northern, of the Syrians. And that is, you see the place where they put the offerings or the blood or whatever they put in there. And that, you'd go in there and you'd worship, honor those gods. So you see the golden calf at Asherah, Ascalon. You see the high place here at Dan. You see that is the place of Old Testament Gesher. It continues. There's another picture on bottom of page 33. Okay. Oh, we don't have time to do this. Oh, my goodness. You're doing very good. I appreciate it. Here's Jerusalem. Very quickly, at the bottom right there on page 34, along with Megiddo, Hazor, and Gezer, Solomon also built up Jerusalem. So if you've seen the gate at Gezer, if you've seen the gate at Hazor, if you've seen the gate at Megiddo, which you have, in the same verse is the gate of Jerusalem. So this gate of Jerusalem should look very similar to those other three, because they're all built by Solomon by the same building crews with the same floor plan. And indeed, you have that right here. You come in here, there's going to be the straight wall, and we call it the straight wall because Nehemiah calls it the straight wall. We went through Nehemiah, and he identifies this part because he came back and he's identifying the parts of what the remains of the city. And that straight wall, if you look up on that map of Jerusalem right up there, you can see it says the straight wall. If you notice, the straight wall is running just like south of the temple, almost parallel with the south of the temple, and right there is the gate. This is the gate. Now, it's very, very, very confusing. I've got pictures there. I've walked through it. I've took 1,000. I've made videos. I took selfies. And I read the book by Elliot Mazur. Steve's looked at it, and it's like, because it's built over then by the New Testament city, then it's built over by the Byzantines, it's built over by the Muslims, and they're excavating down. And, well, this is right here where they find, once again, if you're interested, they find in a scientific excavation, they find the Isaiah and a Hezekiah bulla. And I've talked about it many times. A bulla is a piece of clay, like when you wrote a document, like a piece of papyrus, you'd roll it up and put a piece of clay there, and they take your signet ring with your name on it, press it in there, and you know that's an official document. And it's like opening an envelope. If it's been opened, it could be tampered with. If it's not been opened, and these would have, what they would do is they'd write, in most cases, they'd write two documents. They'd write a sealed document and seal it with their ring, if it ever was challenged, and then they'd write a document that whoever was receiving it could open up and read it. Okay, I know what's said in this sealed document. Well, the bulla would leave it sealed. When the Babylonians apparently came and burnt this city down, they threw a bunch of the parchments over the wall, and the place is just on fire. Jeremiah records it. He's in the streets crying, watching his city just go up in flames. And it appears, coming out in all the mess, one of Isaiah's documents that he had sent to the royal archives was burnt up, but hid the bulla with his name on it, Isaiah the prophet, was sealed on it, and we have that today. Eliat Mazur found it right there at this city gate. I'll show you in more detail here in a minute. And just a few feet from it was a Hezekiah bulla, and Hezekiah and Isaiah exchanged letters throughout their lifetimes. And it was found in the right place, right time. Anyway, you can see in this, you can see a couple chambers there. There's going to be a water in one of the chambers. There's jars. There. Turn the page. This is that gate right there on that part of Jerusalem. There's some pictures on page 35. We could take a look at it. In fact, let's take a look at it. Turn it like this if you want to, like this, so you get an angle on it. And you can see This is not a six-chamber gate. This is a four-chamber gate. So you would come in from the top. If you got that line diagram, you'd come in the top of the diagram and walk into the large tower. You'd actually walk through the main tower protecting the southern part of the city. And then you'd turn and go through the two chambers, or the four chambers, the one, two chambers on the right side, the three, four chamber on the left side, and then you'd walk into the city. Right there was a royal structure, and there was a little tower beside the large tower. And those were all defense systems. And then the straight wall, which is actually heading towards the Kidron Valley or towards the Mount of Olives. And that is the gate. And again, like I said, I've got all these pictures. I've walked through it. And again, it took me, every time I go through these pictures, it's like, oh, I see it now. There's so much going on in these. The page 36, that number three is the number three chamber. That is the third chamber. And you look at all the junk going around on there. Plus, there's a concrete wall because there's a street going right on top of it that you drive on when you come into Jerusalem. So they're excavating like underneath a highway. So you have sympathy for the whole thing. Bottom of page 36, I've got at the top of that picture on page 36 at the bottom of the page, you can see number one and two chambers that you're going to be walking through to enter the city. But over here on the front of the picture, it's called the royal structure. They found all kinds, they're called pithoi. They're these large jars that would have olive oil or wine or something, sometimes grain, and they would store it there. And that's where they would keep as taxes or in the royal house would be kept right there. It's called the royal structure. It's where people would pay taxes or something. And they found all those jars there. Now, in that picture on page 36 at the bottom, those pithoi jars, those are fake, okay? Those are artificial. Otherwise, I would have picked one up and brought it home, okay? Otherwise, I'd have one on my shelf. It's like, oh, I found this in Jerusalem. And other people would also. And so they're fake. But turn the page, 37. Eliot Mazur is supported by a group in Oklahoma City. And there's a place, so she always sends stuff back. When she excavates, she sends stuff back for them to put it in their museum. And Tony and I, in 2012, I wanted to see the Isaiah and the Hezekiah bulla. No. These are two other bullas that were found from the days of Jeremiah down in the city of David. I wanted to see, their names are mentioned in the book of Jeremiah as people who persecuted Jeremiah because they were part of the big government system. And they found their names on bulla when their documents were burned. Nonetheless, Tony and I went down there and found it. Now, that first picture on page 37, this is at that museum. Those are two water jars that were found in the water chamber in that gate in Jerusalem. And then there's another pot. You can see it there. Oh, right there. The picture that I took in Jerusalem on the middle of page 37, you can see the two. Those are artificial or fake pots. And they're found in that chamber. One of the chambers is called the gate chamber, and you see the bench going around the side, just like you know, see right there's where they'd sit, and there was that metal shelf was not there in that day, but those two jars were found there. They made replicas of them and left them there, but those two jars are in that top picture in Oklahoma City where Tony's standing right there. So those are the actual water jars that were found in that gate, one of the chambers of that gate. Then there's a picture of me at the bottom. That's, as I said, I took selfies. That's me in front of the fake pithoi in that royal part of the gate. And if you turn the page again, there's, you got some more stuff. There's those water jars in Oklahoma City. There's Tony looking at one of the real pithois. There's a picture of me with a replica in Jerusalem, but there's Tony looking at one of the real pithois that were found there. See how they were broken? They had to put them back together. Turn the page. There's the fake pithoi on page 39 in that gate system of Jerusalem. And those are the royal system. Turn the next page, 40. Now we're going back and talking about the bulla. And if you remember, I appreciate you guys sitting there. I hope you come back. Here's the main tower, and you'd come into this tower right here, and then you turn and go through the chambers right here. There's four chambers, however we draw that, right here like this. And there'd be the royal, this is where all the pithoi are over here. But there's a little tower right here, part of another, the fortress. Now, When Eliot Motzer was excavating this, scientifically documenting everything, they found, see that number one on the side right there? That's the, and the straight wall comes off right like this. Here's the straight wall that that Nehemiah identified. Right here, right off that small tower, right here, that is where they found, excuse me. I've got the picture overlaid over an actual picture. So that small tower is right there in the background, right? That's where that one is. But the Isaiah bula, that says, it says on the bula. You can read it in Hebrew. It says Isaiah Rophet. Now again, I say Rophet because the first letter is missing. It's Isaiah, which means Isaiah the prophet, but the P is missing on Rophet. But everybody knows there's no other word for it. It's just, you can see part of the letter's gone. And then there's a deer standing there on top. There's a deer standing, a peaceful deer. It says Isaiah the prophet. So Isaiah would have signed everything with a signet with a deer on it. And they found that right here. Excuse me, I put it right here. It's right, they found that right there in the excavation. I mean, this is the right place, right time. And the Hezekiah bula would have been found right up here. Now this is like the third Hezekiah bula that they've, authentic Hezekiah bula. But the other two or three, they found them, someone found them, like a Galen Weimers picked it up somewhere. Look what I found. And then, yeah, this says Hezekiah. Oh, look, I got Hezekiah bula. And where'd you find it? Over there. And it's like, it's not scientific, but it's authentic. And sometimes, and then someone said, well, I'll buy it from you. How much? Oh, $100. Okay. And then they get on the black market, start, and then someone picks it up in a gift shop in Jerusalem. I got a Hezekiah bula. And no one would know what it was until someone identified, wait, this looks important. And it is. Well, they've got two or three of those in museums, but no background. Then people, well, you can be critical. But Eliot picked one up right here. They're with a brush and stuff. They pick one up, and they picked it up out of the ground right by Isaiah's bula. So now tonight you've seen the golden calf. You've seen the high places. You've seen David's name be found. You've seen Isaiah and Jeremiah's name be found. And there's a picture on the bottom right there, the actual photograph of where you see the road right on the top, the bottom of page 40? See that? There's a road right there. You could just, in fact, I've walked down that road. I've walked across that road. Right up there in the middle of the picture is a road. And down below the road, they found Hezekiah's bula and Isaiah's bula. I've got little spaces where it's found. Just imagine if you just went over and they just started plundering the place, what kind of stuff you could find. I'm just treasure hunting. And people have. And they have found stuff. But they can't tell anybody because it's illegal. And so they have a pretty tight law on that. But that's amazing to find that kind of stuff, I think. Now, on the top of page 41, I've got replicas of them. I've got some authentic things, but these are things I just bought. You know, I found a place of a replica that I could buy for $10, $15 or something. And you can see right there, that is the first one is Isaiah. You can see the two legs of the deer. And then it says right there, Isaiah the prophet, or belonging to Isaiah the prophet. And it's found on the offal, that's that part. And the next one is belonging to Hezekiah, and it says on there, son of Ahaz, king of Judah. That bula says, belonging to Hezekiah, Ahaz, king of Judah. And mine is a replica, but that's amazing. And you see that it's got a little image on it that fits the time, and there's more diagrams there. Okay, turn to page 42. And Tony and I have gone in this picture. We have gone clear. We got a cab, and it says, just take us way to the south of the city. And we paid him, and he took us out there. And we're standing way south of the city, almost in Bethlehem, looking back at Jerusalem. And you can see the Dome of the Rock. You can see the Ophel. And I've got a little circle there and a square inside the circle. That square is that city gate. And that's the straight wall would have gone, continued right down that road going towards the Mount of Olives. And that little square right there, that is that gate that we were just talking about. That's where they found the Hezekiah and Isaiah bula. In fact, the next picture is Tony taking photographs. I'm taking a picture of Tony taking a photograph. And there I've got right there, Isaiah bula found here on the Ophel, and I've circled it right there. And there's the Temple Mount. And so those are, you know, one I just kind of got a close up. That's those places. The whole point for saying that, and I'm glad you're still here, please come back. Now, Sodom is on the other side of the Jordan. I've never been there. This is a, and I drew these myself, but I copied Steve Collins and Lean Rittmeyer's work so I could just put them in here. But they have found this is the wall of the city of Sodom. That gray line is the ramparts or the glacis, where there's the black line is the wall. That gray line is the slope away from the wall, the glacis. And you know what that is. You saw it at Ashkelon. And then they found the two towers, and they found the gate system. And that's a drawing. I copied that. But obviously, Lean Rittmeyer, who's involved in this project, Steve Collins is working with, or Lean Rittmeyer came over and talked to him and worked with him and was there when they discovered this. And that is the gate of Sodom right there. That's what I said right here. Genesis 19, 1 through 3. And Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. You can see on the map up on top, on the bottom of that, the city drawing, it says main gate. That's where the gate was at. That's where the angels walked through. That's where Lot was sitting. And then down below that, that's the gate. He was sitting in one of those chambers when the angels walked in. He doesn't know they're angels. He thinks they're people. He thinks they're two men. He thinks they're visitors. And then right there, it says beside the gate, going back to the map, I got domestic area. That means that's a place of houses. We don't know where Lot's house is at, but he invites him right to his house. He could be right there. Now, we've got to talk about some things, and I've got notes for next week. This is what we're going to now cover now. This is what we're getting. All this was foundation for this. So again, yeah, you're thinking, he's not going to start, is he? Tony's thinking, no. That's only chapter 1 through 3. I will show you this on here. And I don't want you to read it ahead of time, but you certainly can. If you go to this page right here, I photocopied out of the book from Steve Collins' book, and it's his Steve Collins stuff. But I copied like 6 pages. And that I've underlined just so I could read it to you, and I will read it to you next week. You can read it yourself. Buy the book if you want to. But his crew discovering that gate. It's not there. They don't know where it's at. They're working, and all of a sudden, they find this corner. And as they're working, it's like they cover it. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a tower. We found one of the towers in the wall of Sodom. And they're looking at it, and they go around to find the other side. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like it doesn't fit. It's like, what is this? And then they call Lean Rittmeyer over, and he comes over, and he say, well, and you can read it. He's talking about, well, all the monumental gates that I've drawn and I've studied, all these pictures that I took, he's worked on some of those sites. He's been to those sites. He's studied, you know, way beyond. He's a doctor of this stuff. And he's looking at it going, I know this doesn't make sense. And you just read it, and all of a sudden he says, well, if this was the main gate, he says, what you should find is, and he describes what you should find. And they go, well, that's not what we're finding. He goes, well, and they kept going. All of a sudden, something happens, and this happens. And all of a sudden, one day, it's like, Lean said it should be this big. They find something. It's like, and they say, well, then we should have, the next tower should be right there. What? And they started scraping. All of a sudden, it's like, I found another corner. And they, oh my gosh. And they found the main, of all the things they stumbled upon, they got this whole tell to excavate, they found the main city gate. And so that's that whole part right there. You can read that. It's kind of like a play-by-play. And just because I thought you didn't see enough gates, if you look on page, starting on page 3 and page 4, there's the gate at Beersheba. Okay? That's the gate at Beersheba. And that's, I didn't put a big dot. That's also on the map. But we'll look at that next week. All right. I'll pray. Thank you so much for coming. I hope you find that interesting. For me, it helps when it's, otherwise you got that little verse that's sitting there. Lot was sitting in the gate of the city. What, I mean, he's sitting on a porch swing? I mean, he's sitting in a lawn chair? It's like, well, as you read through those notes, it's like, no, this is where all the legal things were taking place. Something had happened to Lot from being with the sheep in the pastures that he's sitting in the gate, and the men of the city even come to his house and say, you came here as a sojourner, and now you keep acting like the judge. You are acting like a judge. Not pretending. They say, you are now a judge. meaning what happened? He went in and he's in the city gate. People just don't go hang out in the city gate. There's something taking place, especially he meets the visitors. That's where they had illegal immigration back then too. And you give them and say, where's your paperwork? Who are you? They had to check in. And Lot is overseeing this whole process. It probably has something to do with Genesis chapter 14, where Abraham rescues the city, delivers all their stuff back to him, and brings Lot back. And they're like, Lot probably got some political favor. It's like, why don't you be one of the leaders of the city? You know, and something happened. And so, anyway, I'll stop with that, pray, and we'll take off. I appreciate so much. I appreciate you being here. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into these things. We ask that we would handle them diligently, that we'd allow the scriptures to speak to us today, that we would hear your voice and do the things you've called us to, just as you've been speaking throughout history. We do thank you for this evidence. We thank you for the fact that we can see the Word of God not just bring spiritual life, but actually be part of real history. And we ask that we would continue to explain it, live it, and be part of the coming kingdom as we prepare ourselves and prepare others for your soon return. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you again for your time.